Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Think Big Bodybuilding Media. I'm Scott McNally, and today we are with Dr. Dean St. Mart. We're going to talk about heart health. We're going to talk about some heart supplementation. But first of all, Dean, I gotta welcome you to the new network. We've had you on Advices Radio a bunch of times, but welcome, brother, and thank you for being here with us at Think Big.
Thanks very much, Scott. It's always a pleasure to be on here with you discussing everything health-wise and obviously supplementation towards health and bodybuilding.
Guys, I got to tell you, Dr. Dean is a brilliant guy. We've done a couple of podcasts now where we've talked about a lot of different health supplements and different processes in the body, how they work. I've gained some new, deeper understanding. You know, like I came from the boards, you know, a decade plus ago, when the only health supplements that you really took were going to be like milk thistle. You took 1,000 milligrams if you ran D-ball. That was it. And we didn't even really know why. We just knew that the liver regenerated itself, so you're probably going to be okay after you come off and your enzyme levels are going to go. But that was really about it, man. We've come so far. If you guys haven't had a chance to, go back in the Advices Radio archives and you can check out our previous shows on audio. Also, while I mention this, please subscribe if you haven't and hit the notification bell so that you can stay up to date. Our programming is brought to you guys by True Nutrition. You can use our code ADVICES for some additional savings and high quality supplements from a company that you can trust. Just like Dr. Dean, you work with supplement needs. That is when we talk about high quality supplements, you guys are really, you're one of the best for healthcare supplements. You have the liver stack, which, is that what it is? It's called the liver stack. Is it, or is it changed names?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
I wasn't sure. We have the liver stack.
Okay. Yep. I wasn't sure if that one changed names. Okay.
Yeah. Like I was saying, some of them, we had to change the name. The liver, we were able to get around.
Excellent. And I had it's not a cheap product, but that said, you guys have a lot of high quality stuff in there. One of our listeners, after we spoke about it, broke down everything that was in the product and he did the shopping. He ended up buying everything that it would take to make the liver stack, and it ended up costing more than had he just bought your product. So I thought that was really cool to see it just like put to the test like that. But today we're going to talk about heart health. To start us out, for anybody who isn't familiar with who you are, can you tell us a little bit about your education and what your business is making supplements?
Yeah, so I have a double first class honors degree in chemistry and pharmaceutical chemistry. So my initial background would be in drug design and pharmacology. And obviously then I applied that knowledge to pharmacology of bodybuilding. And then I hold a PhD in synthetic organic chemistry. So obviously I'm well versed then in how we can manipulate molecules. So for example, testosterone, to create all the different types of androgens that exist now in bodybuilding. And then on top of that, I have an interest in functional medicine. So like what we've discussed previously on several of the other podcasts, figuring out root causes as to why we have a problem, as opposed to, like you said, someone telling you take 1,000 milligrams milk thistle, your liver will be fine.
Yeah.
Without actually, you know, there's so many different pathologies, like we discussed on the previous podcast on Advices, about, you know, for liver health you have to combat bile flow, cholestasis. If anyone wants to go back and listen to them, we went into, you know, estrogen metabolism of the liver. There's so many different processes that, you know, we're trying to combat decades of bro science in the forums of, oh, just take this as, you know, an insurance policy.
Right.
And I guess viewing all that again over the last 10 years when I was, you know, growing up in my 20s and seeing this on the forums, it just didn't seem logical to me how we were applying supplementation to the science of health, basically. So 2 years ago, I approached Lee, who owns Supplement Needs, with some ideas for supplements. And that was initially the sleep stack that we talked about in the very first podcast.
That's a great product too, by the way, man. I've used that consistently and I can tell a difference. When I use it on a regular basis, especially, my quality of sleep is better. It doesn't knock me out. You know, it's not like a knock you out type thing, exactly. But the quality is definitely improved.
Yeah, and I mean, that all stemmed from figuring out the processes towards getting better sleep. So then I had the idea towards, you know, a liver stack, a heart stack, a kidney stack, all these different physiological functions of the body that get affected through bodybuilding and the perhaps enhanced supplementation route. So my main driver basically is also, I got fed up with seeing so many companies take advantage of people surrounding, you know, profit before the actual health of the customer. And that was, you know, my ethos from the very start with supplement needs was we create products which put the consumer first that are clinically dosed, and then whatever money's made after that, brilliant. So obviously, like you see with the liver stack that was put to the test, we wanted to make that affordable, yet still not compromise on the ingredients. And like one of them in it is 800 milligrams of Tudka, which is quite an expensive ingredient. So you can see sort of the viewpoint we're taking on this company going forward basically is we create a brand which caters for all the health aspects of bodybuilding that one person can go to a website and, you know, tick off the boxes towards what products they require and have it all in basically one package, as opposed to having to open, you know, 17 or 18 different bottles every morning to get whatever supplements you want to take.
Right. Yeah, that's fantastic, man. So, guys, today we are going to talk about heart health, cardiovascular health, and we will talk about cardiovascular supplementation. You know, we mentioned supplement needs, and Dean has created a CV product, as it's called, for cardiovascular health. So just to start us out then, how bad are steroids on your heart, really? Because I feel like that this is one where I've seen so many people that have had, you know, guys who had competed long term, guys who have had then like open heart surgery. I mean, Arnold had a bypass.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to cardiovascular health with bodybuilding, it's a very multifaceted disease, you could say. On one hand, you have the potential for androgen receptor stimulation on your cardiac muscle. So you end up with the left side ventricle of your heart actually enlarging.
Yeah.
And again, that is putting extra pressure on your heart to then have to, one, it thickens within, so the wall thickens. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the strength of the heart can take that extra load from that thickening. You can then end up with the potential to drive inflammatory processes in the body, which could then further induce the formation of atherosclerotic plaque. So we're all familiar with, you know, the potential for a heart attack due to, say, a plaque rupturing and causing a blood clot. We have the other side where steroids cause increased red blood cell production because of how it acts at the kidneys and spleen. So again, that raises your hematocrit, which would be the percentage of red blood cells per unit of volume.
I want to go in a little deeper on this one because I have a couple of questions. This is something that affects me personally. Before we go any further, though, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to ask. So you mentioned left ventricle enlargement. Now, that is something that my doctor has told me that I have mild left ventricle enlargement. And she also said that this looks normal, that this doesn't appear to be the cause of steroids. So from what I understand, the heart is a muscle. If you exercise, it is going to get bigger. What's the difference between a left ventricle enlargement that's natural from exercise and something that was induced from steroids? Is there a difference?
Not that I'm hugely aware of.
Okay.
We do know that, you know, endurance athletes, because of, you know, aerobic conditioning, that left ventricle does get stronger over time as a result of the capacity for pumping blood in response to endurance training.
Okay.
I guess this would be one thing that we get to later on in the podcast would be, you know, most people don't monitor how their heart is progressing through their bodybuilding career. And what I mean by that is either looking at the potential for calcium to be deposited in the arteries, which will give you your calcium score. And we can use that as a theoretical measurement of how much plaque is distributed throughout your body. Or we can actually do a non-invasive ultrasound, which we call an echocardiogram, and we can use that to assess the integrity and structure of the heart and actually how blood is moving through the actual four chambers.
Now, that's what I've had done. And then the doc, what my doctor said is she wants to repeat that process on a yearly basis so we can monitor the differences. She said that it's unhealthy if it's growing too fast. But if it's enlarged from exercise and it's just kind of staying there, that's okay. Is what, at least that's the way I understand it. I'm kind of asking a question here too at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I have the same issue in that when I was 17 years of age, I contracted pericarditis, which is basically a viral infection of the pericardium, which is the outer sheet of muscle surrounding your heart.
Okay.
And as a result of that virus, it's left me with what's called a bigeminal heartbeat, when my heart beats twice in the one heartbeat every, say, 60 or 70 beats.
Okay, interesting. Huh.
So,
but that's okay, so though? That's result, like, that's not unhealthy or anything? Yeah.
It's not unhealthy. It's quite common. Oh. It'd be like a little murmur, but you still need to monitor the integrity of the heart every couple of years to make sure that everything is fine, because obviously I'm adding an extra heartbeat every, say, 60 beats.
Gotcha.
So that adds up over the course of time, basically.
Gotcha.
And so for myself, echocardiogram is a must every 2 years minimum.
Okay. Okay.
And like you, I've continued to do that, and fingers crossed, everything so far with me has been normal. There's been no excessive enlargement with either side.
Okay. So sorry, I knocked you off track a little bit, though. You you had gotten up to like high hematocrit, hemoglobin, all that stuff.
Yeah. So I mean, like, when androgens act on the kidneys and spleen, you're going to have increased red blood cells. Having a higher hematocrit, which is the percentage of red blood cells in a unit volume of blood, we want to control that, because basically the higher that percentage goes, the more red blood cells we have in a unit volume of blood, the more chance there is for thrombotic risk. In that, say something was to happen in terms of an inflammatory event, if our platelets are high in the middle of all that red blood cell, congestion, you could call it, it could lead to an unwanted blood clot. And again, when that blood clot reaches your heart, it could potentially trigger a heart attack, basically.
Okay.
So hematocrit, we want to control the amount of red blood cells to ensure that our blood stays less viscous so that it can travel freely through the body. And obviously that's going to have a knock-on effect again towards your blood volume with blood pressure.
Have you ever heard... I'm sorry to interrupt you again. Have you heard anybody ever talk about it being okay that your hematocrit is a little higher? I heard there was a guy who was at Swiss. I can't remember his name offhand. I saw a video that he did where he had said that that there are diseases out there that will cause increased hematocrit, and that's a side effect of that, and that's bad, but. If you say I have high hematocrit from being at elevation or as a result of TRT, it may not necessarily mean that it's an unhealthy thing and that you shouldn't necessarily freak out. Dante Trudell had posted a couple of comments on a post I made, because I was asking about home therapeutic phlebotomy. And he was saying that it's possible that it's even a bad thing to do phlebotomy too much if you don't need it, that you could have the opposite effect, that you could start building red blood cells faster, and that a couple points higher from TRT. We're not talking about guys that are run hard cycles, but that it's not necessarily unhealthy. It could be completely normal. Can you share any thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, I mean, like what I discussed previously. So if you have high hematocrit, which is high red blood cell counts, but your platelets are normal. So like I said, the main risk with high hematocrit is that if an arterial lesion was to happen, say, where we had an injury inside the artery and that set off a thrombotic cascade, because you have such viscous blood with high hematocrit, if your platelets also develop in high numbers with your red blood cells, then there is potential for a thrombotic scenario to happen where you have a clot forming from the high platelets.
Okay.
Now, if you have a hematocrit of, say, 0.55, but your platelets are low, well, then your thrombotic risk is, as it would be if your hematocrit had been, you know, 50%.
Okay.
At 0.5.
Okay.
It's more so when you start to see platelets trend with hematocrit that it's wise then to reduce the blood volume to remove some of those platelets and red blood cells through phlebotomy.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you for clearing that up for me.
So like Dante said, if you are, you know, continuously removing blood, there is potential for EPO to get upregulated by your kidneys, because obviously your body senses that you're removing blood. It's losing blood all the time. And again, that's a classic scenario of how blood doping has happened in the past before the production of, you know, synthetic EPO. You'd have cyclists remove a volume of blood, let their blood stores build back up again, and then introduce the blood that they took out of their body back into their system again.
I've heard that. It's got to be crazy, man. I've heard that it's dangerous. It can raise your blood pressure, all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not uncommon for some of these cyclists that were in Tour de France to have hematocrits like way over 0.6.
Okay.
Because of that process of putting that blood back in. But you can see that if you're removing blood constantly, DPO upregulation can happen.
Okay.
And in time, you're sort of, you know, shooting yourself in the foot. So, you know, red blood cells take on average 90 days to mature. So you're looking at maybe scheduled phlebotomy maybe twice a year, and that's it.
Okay.
So.
Okay, so these are these are the issues then that could potentially happen. Potentially we could do phlebotomy twice a year. And definitely it sounds like, how often would you suggest you get an EKG?
So an EKG is, you know, an electrical trace of the heart. So we can actually see the sinusal waves of how the heart is beating itself. An EKG, same like an echocardiogram, either yearly or biannually. So every 2 years.
Okay.
And more so when we get into our 30s, it probably is worthwhile doing a stress test, which is, you know, an EKG combined with intense cardiovascular output.
Okay.
So you're able to then figure out, basically can give you sort of like an age of what your heart basically is.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever had a stress test before.
No, I have not actually.
So you basically, I've had it. If you think back to high school and fitness tests with the beep test of running up and down the hall.
Yeah.
With a stress test, you're put on a treadmill and they slowly bump up the speed and the incline until you basically have to, you know, I can't do this anymore, until you can't breathe basically.
Yeah.
And they're able to monitor how quickly then your heart rate can recover back to baseline.
Oh, interesting.
And from that then we're able to give you a rough guidance of, you know, the health of your heart with response to your age basically.
Okay, interesting. Huh. Yeah, I feel like I should probably go get something like that then. I feel like anybody in bodybuilding. But your suggestion is if you're over 30, you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Once we hit that 30-year mark, it would be wise. That's when we need to tread carefully towards our cardiovascular health as we head into older age.
Okay.
Hey, what's up, guys? I want to take just a really brief intermission from this episode of Advices Radio with Dr. Dean St. Mark to do two things. Number one, I wanted to say thank you to all of you guys, because you know, this is our audio commercial for the audio version of the podcast, and it is you guys, the audio listeners, that make up the foundation and the roots of what Advices Radio is. So I wanted to say thank you to you guys. As 2019 comes to a close, True Nutrition has sponsored us now through the entire year, and I'm super, super grateful for that. So I want to shout them out. You know, True Nutrition is a company that I am honored to be working with. You know, the owner, Dante Trudell, is one of the greatest minds in our industry. If you guys don't follow Dante, he is putting out some really cool stuff. Even like in his social media, he drops some bombs. So definitely follow along with him. And I'm going to tell you what, he is a guy. You know that he's a straight shooter. If you follow him, then you know it. He's a good dude, and he's going to put together a product that you can trust. And that is so valuable in this industry, because there's just so many fly by night, you know, people that are in it to make a quick buck. And that is the opposite of what true nutrition is. So they're not out there, you know, advertising with flashy marketing and gimmicks. And, you know, they're just keeping it bare bones, keeping it simple, and delivering very high quality products. I'm using their Perry MD product right now. There's their intra workout that was formulated by John Meadows. And it's a great product. I love it. You know, it's not cheap. You're going to spend like $60 on it. But I've been shopping around, and I'll tell you what, competitor products are going to be just as expensive. Not to mention, I've seen competitor products that are as much money and don't have nearly the quality products in them. I mean, we're talking 25 grams, I believe it is, of highly branched cyclic dextrin that is a premium product. A lot of companies are going to try to chintz on that and only put in, you know, half as much, or put in a proprietary, let's see if I can speak, right? A proprietary blend, whereas True Nutrition puts out a high quality product. Plus it has EAA in it. EAA is going to give you those aminos so that the carbs have something to deliver to your muscles so that you can recover faster and that you can grow. That's one of the reasons that we use intra-workout. So anyway, guys, once again, I value you. Thank you. And I value True Nutrition. Guys, let's get to 2020 here. Let's go into it with a bang. Let's see what we can do.
So let's talk supplements then. For starters, I don't even know what to ask here, because I feel like, does everybody need heart? I guess that's the foundation, really. Does everybody need heart supplements, or is this something that you should take if you have a condition, or what's your thoughts here? Because this isn't something I know a ton about.
I guess I always say this about supplements towards health and bodybuilding, that it should be tailored towards your blood work and your baseline, your natural baseline of what you may be predisposed to as a natural, compared to when you have, you know, a super physiological level of, say, testosterone.
Okay.
Some people may not require heart health supplementation per se to the next person, but there are some, you know, general guidelines, and I hate using the word insurance policy, but there are some things that we need to account for that may cause progression of atherosclerosis at a future point in life.
Okay.
So I guess one of the main, what they are starting to think now, when you look at some of the research of the last 5 or 6 years, is that inflammation tends to be one of the main driving processes towards plaque formation, in combination with our dietary fat intake. So when we look at inflammation, if we have high inflammation in the body, and say an arterial lesion occurs in response to that inflammation, where we get a little damage in the endothelium, which is the outside sheath of cells of our artery.
Okay.
When that gets damaged, there's a potential then for LDL particles to pass inside the artery, basically inside the arterial wall, and that triggers off then another inflammation cascade, where white blood cells, which we've come to term them foam cells, well, you can basically think of them as like a Pac-Man, and they like to eat up all this LDL because it's a foreign molecule to them. So when the LDL passes inside into the arterial wall, these white blood cells basically remove the LDL from inside the arterial wall because it sees it as a foreign molecule. That generates what's called a foam cell. And these foam cells can then aggregate together to form what we call a plaque.
Oh, okay.
So when that plaque forms, as opposed to what we taught previously, where plaque deposits on the outside of the wall, the plaque actually occurs inside the arterial wall. And it comes to a point then where that plaque starts to keep building and then bulges out into the arterial, space, the arterial volume. And then it can, at some point, rupture, release the contents of that plaque into the bloodstream. And that's what then causes a thrombotic cascade, where platelets aggregate to remove that plaque from our bloodstream, basically.
Huh, okay.
And it's when that plaque reaches the, you know, one of the arteries, so the coronary artery into the heart, that it can cause a blockage and trigger a heart attack, you know, starve the heart of oxygen and obviously lead to a heart attack episode.
Okay, so, go ahead.
I guess what a person should be focusing on if they are looking at heart supplementation as an insurance policy would be to lower the potential for LDL to get oxidized, which generates like a rancid LDL molecule in the blood. Obviously, we have free radicals in our body and we have antioxidants which combat that oxidation. So we should be looking at potentially using antioxidants to prevent that LDL from getting oxidized and causing that inflammation cascade through, you know, the foam cells, removing the LDL.
Okay. Does using steroids potentially make this plaque buildup worse?
No.
Oh, okay.
So it's a difficult question to get around in that, I guess, white blood cells have androgen receptors themselves.
Okay.
So there is potential for immune dysfunction to occur with white blood cells, you know, because obviously everyone's heard of test flu.
Yeah.
And test flu is an immune response whereby the androgen receptors on white blood cells get activated and basically generates an immune response.
I'll be damned. It's on the white blood. I've always wondered, I assumed that it was an immune response, but I never knew like the function.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so androgen receptors are everywhere in the body. So when we look at side effects as it comes to steroid use, it's always going back to the androgen receptor.
Yeah.
Now, we do have androgen receptors on our arterial walls, but it's more so probably going to be a risk factor of the white blood cells being triggered into foam cells from androgen receptor activation.
Okay.
Now, you see, heart health is so multifaceted. It's not just that you take steroids, you're going to develop heart disease. And I commented on, going back to Dante again, he had a post a while back about heart health. And the number one thing I said was, well, you've missed one common rule, and that's don't eat like an asshole. In that, you know, guys are, you know, they're not thinking wisely over their food choices, and fat intake, the type of fat that you ingest, is going to have an effect towards whether you develop arterial plaque or not. On top of these inflammatory cascades as well.
Dude, I think that that's huge, man. It's easy. I feel like sometimes in bodybuilding, we can feel kind of invincible that, you know, I could go out. If I'm pushing hard, my metabolism is pretty fast. I could probably eat. And I have at one point, I was trying to push up eating like 9,000 calories a day. I moved up from middleweight to light heavy that year. It was the most food I ever ate. And I ate McDonald's every day on that diet. I mean, I ate clean too, but I was eating some shit food, man. And I feel like we can get away with that, you know, when you're not getting fat from it. If you're not getting fat from it, it must be fine. So much of the IIFYM, there's so much shit food involved there, man. You know, and I think that this is a huge point you're making right now.
It is. I mean, I'm beyond the realms of, you know, fully in depth towards nutritional science. But we do have to, you know, realize that guys who are going out and eating like four or five burgers from Five Guys when on, you know, super physiological levels of androgens isn't probably the wisest decision for long-term health.
Yeah.
And I mean, if we go back to even the example of Arnold from back in the 70s with steroid use, those guys, majority had high protein, high fat diets with androgen use.
Okay.
So, You know, there's this lack of education towards, you know, maybe potentially looking at more so polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fat intake versus your overall saturated fat intake.
Okay.
And I feel then, you know, we don't put as much emphasis towards, you know, balancing omega-3 versus omega-6 in our body towards, you know, lower inflammatory processes versus pro-inflammatory.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I think that's it's an important one. It's something I could learn from too. This is something I try to focus on, but I think that hearing something about this topic from you would be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, so the overall thing that we should be looking at, and again, it's you can do it through blood work, is your omega-3 to omega-6 ratio within your blood, within your serum blood. And ideally, what we're looking for there is a 4:1 ratio of omega-6 is to omega-3.
Okay.
So we want, you know, at any point in time within our blood, we want a certain level of these omega-3 polyunsaturated fats versus omega-6. But through diet, so obviously our diet has omega-6 fatty acids in it, through, you know, certain oils that are used. And we're ingesting these oils, so we're adding to that omega-6 ratio through our diet, through some of the, you know, refined carbohydrate and also some of the oils that are used in food processing. And it's not uncommon for, you know, the average person who doesn't pay attention to their omega-3 intake to have their omega-6 ratio up around 20-25:1. And that's where, again, when we quiz people on omega-3 intake, so there are quite a few meta-analysis looking at omega-3 intake versus health outcomes, and some of them disagree, where, you know, omega-3 isn't associated with improved cardiovascular health, and there's others that say there is improved health with omega-3 intake. So the research is sort of split down the middle. But when we ask anyone about, you know, what's your fish intake per week or what's your omega-3 intake, someone will probably say to you, well, I take 2 fish oil capsules a day.
Yeah.
And it could be, you know, any brand, they don't even pay attention. Like omega-3 fish oil, the science to that supplementation is immense, because there's so much potential for those oils to go rancid and actually cause more issues to your body than you taking the omega-3 supplement.
No kidding. Wow.
And then you need to look at, you know, the ratios of the constituents of your fish oil. So you have EPA and DHA. So it's eicosapentaenoic acid, and it's I think it's docahexaenoic acid is DHA. And these two specific counterparts to fish oil are what are linked to the potential health positive outcomes when we ingest omega-3s.
Okay.
Again, you know, lower prostaglandin synthesis for lower inflammation. And obviously we're trying to combat then the omega-3 pro-inflammatory molecules that are made, like arachidonic acid.
Okay.
But when we look at the ratio of EPA and DHA, most people who take a fish oil, if it's something off the supermarket shelf, it's probably only going to have about 250 milligrams of EPA and DHA. And when we look at the clinical studies, you need somewhere around 3 to 4 grams.
Wow.
Of EPA, DHA.
Wow.
So you're looking at, you know, a really high quality fish oil product that's going to help you hit that mark. So for anyone that's listening, you know, we have Nordic Naturals or Nordic oil from the UK. And those two products, you can get somewhere around 3 to 4 grams of EPA and DHA through that product by taking the max supplementation dose of it.
Okay. And is that again, something that you would suggest? I know you said that it's split, the research is, but
I personally believe that fish oil, like fatty fish intake, should be part of someone's diet.
Okay.
I'm not sold on the research telling me that there is no effect. So for now, my recommendation, and a lot of some of the top cardiologists in the US do recommend, between 3 and 4 grams of EPA and DHEA.
Okay.
I guess when it comes to fish oil supplementation, like I said, you want to make sure that, one, it's in a dark bottle, in a dark glass amber bottle, because you can have photo oxidation of the oil. So if it's exposed to sunlight, exposed to heat, that will degrade the EPA and DHEA. So again, you're lessening the ratio of that product.
Okay.
And you want to make sure that the total oxidation of the oil, that when it's farmed or fished, whichever way you get the fish oil, that it's produced as quick as possible to ensure the integrity of the oil from the fish. There are questions that should be asked by consumers when they're buying fish oil products for heart.
I've heard that if you are burping up fish oil, that it is rancid. Is that true?
I've never heard of that, but okay. I can see probably why. But again, it's probably, again, this is another thing. People don't realize that when you take fish oil, you have to digest the oil.
Mm.
It's not a fact of, like, you know, it's like taking a teaspoon of olive oil. You have to digest that oil. It's the same as omega-3 fish oil intake. That, again, it's probably best that you not necessarily chew the oil, but allow it to come into contact with your mouth for a period of time to allow it to get absorbed through the buccal membranes. And then also then it passes to your stomach, that you don't have a lipase deficiency.
Mm.
So if you're burping back up the fish oil, it might be a sign that you have a lipase deficiency and you're not digesting the oil fast enough, basically.
Interesting. So and lipase would be a digestive enzyme, right?
Digestive enzyme for fats, yeah. So okay. Again, people don't realize that when they take fish oil, it is basically a nutritional source of food, basically.
Yeah, yeah, that's
so
interesting.
So you do need to digest the oil to take advantage of the constituents of the oil. Otherwise, it's just going to pass into your small intestine and then you're going to flush it out, basically.
When you say it that way, it feels like real common sense, but I never thought of it before.
Yeah, I mean, I only discovered that, I'd say, 6 or 7 years ago when I thought about it logically, that, you know, we all pop fish oil capsules and then, all right, I've taken the fish oil, that's fine, it's in my body.
Yeah.
But you need to then think about, okay, the capsule needs to get digested and then the oil needs to get digested so that those beneficial constituents go into our bloodstream to exert their effect.
Yeah. I've used I've used liquid fish oil before. You just, you know, it sounds disgusting, but I've had lemon flavored fish oil. You would never think that it was fish oil. It doesn't taste like anything but lemon. So, I mean, it's tolerable. Would you suggest something like that? Would that be potentially easier on your stomach to digest?
Yeah. And I mean, that's the one I was saying about for the UK. Nordic Oils is a lemon flavored fish oil.
Okay.
So it makes it a little bit easier to take.
Okay.
And then I'm in the process of developing one with supplement needs.
Oh, sweet.
And it, like we discussed there, it's actually a chewable fish oil capsule.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And so you're having to chew the product, you're having to digest it in your mouth before you swallow it.
Yeah.
And it's a fruit flavored capsule. So again, you don't think you're taking fish oil. It's just this nice fruity taste in your mouth. You don't get any fishy, burpy taste when you ingest the product. You're getting the process.
Had I not ever used that liquid fish oil that tastes like lemon flavor or orange flavor, I had that too, I would not believe you right now. I'd be like, no, there's got to be a fishy undertaste to it. But I was blown away, man. A lot of people can't get around that. They're like, no, I can't do liquid fish oil. But I swear to God, it tasted just like lemon. So,
the flavoring, the food science to it's remarkable.
It really is.
And I mean, I've been really impressed with the product that we've been working with this manufacturer, like, to the point that you could eat these basically fish oil tablets as sweets.
Oh man. So with potential issues of digesting fish oil, would you suggest that people split that up through the day, or are you fine? Because my thought has always been, whatever my fish oil dose has been, I wake up in the morning, I take my fish oil with meal one.
Yeah. I mean, so again, that's another thing that people don't realize. Say if you're in a contest prep and you're taking fish oil and say it's liquid form. Well, a teaspoon of fish oil has approximately 5 grams of fat.
Yeah.
So if you're taking 2 or 3 servings a day, that's 15 grams of fat from your total allowance per day gone.
Sure.
So I always aim for 10 mils of Nordic oil in the morning and then 10 mils at night. So 20 mils total gives you close to that 3 to 4 gram of EPA DHEA. And it's split up, so you're getting, you know, 10 grams in the morning, 10 grams at night.
Okay.
And that would be, you know, that would be my fat intake for those two meals.
Okay.
In a pre-contest.
Makes sense, man. That makes sense. So let's get into the CV product that Supplement Needs has. Can you tell us a little bit about the components that make this supplement up and that why you included them?
Yeah, so I'll take it here in my hand to go through it. So we have, so basically what I wanted to do with this product was create something that had, you know, research-driven dosages of compounds that we have supporting literature for towards cardiovascular health. So the main thing to start would be we need to ensure that we're supporting HDL metabolism, so we're helping HDL production and, you know, preserving the function of the HDL then that is created. So one of the problems with high androgen steroid use is that we are then causing the liver to make excessive amounts of hepatic lipase. And hepatic lipase is an enzyme that breaks down HDL. So that's why we see when we use certain compounds like Anavar, the HDL goes to the floor, basically.
Absolutely.
Because of that hepatic lipase production. Now, the unfortunate thing, and this is, again, my own thoughts on it, what we need to do in that case is preserve the amount of HDL that we're producing and then aim to try and recover the amount of HDL that we produce post use of the compounds. So when people think that they take supplements to improve HDL when they take supraphysiological doses, well, that thinking is flawed because of you can't counterbalance that production of hepatic lipase. So what you need to do then is make the best of a situation and support your current HDL and then go back to what we said at the start and make sure that the LDL that we're producing in response to the HDL is supported. So with the CV stack, I purposely put in for HDL, there's 500 milligrams of citrus bergamot. So citrus bergamot has beneficial flavonoids, which have been shown in the literature to improve HDL production. There's then 900 milligrams of patidine. So patidine is a coenzyme A precursor, and that's involved in cholesterol synthesis. So again, you're going to support the production of HDL molecules with patidine. Then I have a advanced antioxidant, I guess, complex, you could say, to the ingredients. And now I've included olive leaf extract, grapeseed extract, EGCG, the component of green tea, coenzyme Q10, astaxanthin, and then a tocotrienol complex. So vitamin E is composed of tocotrienols and tocopherols.
Okay.
But we know that the tocotrienols are probably the more important ones towards our antioxidant status in the body. So we have, like, how many ingredients was that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then allicin from garlic. 7 ingredients that all act as antioxidants towards helping protect LDL from being oxidized and ensuring, you know, that our arterial health isn't compromised.
Okay. Let me back up for just a minute. I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning to make sure that, because I don't know if I understand this completely. So the LDL is in the artery. Yep. And yep. Then something, what is it that comes in there? The Pac-Man things?
So basically you have your artery.
Yep.
If a little, so basically you have these cells, your endothelium are single cells. So you can imagine they're like this 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way along, right?
Right.
So they're single cells, they're not very strong. So if they break, you have something now being able to pass into the arterial wall. Because okay. Again, the endothelium is only one cell.
Okay.
So if we get a little scratch or a little lesion in the artery, now all of a sudden these LDL molecules can pass into the arterial wall through that lesion.
Yeah.
And because the LDL now is seen as a foreign molecule to our immune system, we have white blood cells, macrophages, whose job is to eat up foreign invaders.
Yeah.
They sense the LDL as being a foreign invader and they, you know, remove the LDL from the arterial wall space.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the white blood cell, and then after that, that breaks down and becomes an unhealthy, that's what becomes the plaque?
Basically, yeah. The foam cell is now like a sticky cell and they all sort of stick together.
Okay.
And in doing that, they stick with the likes of, you know, thrombotic factors, so stuff that can cause platelets then to aggregate, and calcium.
So the white blood cells are drawn to the LDL, is what it comes down to. Okay. Now,
Oxidized LDL.
Okay.
So
the damaged. So
yeah, damaged LDL.
So we're going to try to maintain the integrity of the LDL with these antioxidants.
Correct.
So that the white blood cells aren't drawn to it to begin with.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I that's what I thought you were saying, but I wasn't sure. This is brand new to me, by the way, if you can't tell. So thanks for bearing with me.
Yeah. I mean, it's a far out concept, because before we would have thought that the artery got damaged and then the LDL, the plaque basically formed on the damaged surface of the artery.
Yeah.
Whereas now what we're thinking, like I said, is that actually the oxidized LDL passes into the arterial wall.
Okay.
And then basically causes the plaque to form. If you look, I can't remember the name of the paper, but it's by Mark Houston.
Okay.
He's a consultant cardiologist from Texas. Is it from Texas? I have his book here. He is the associate clinical professor of medicine in the St. Thomas Medical Group.
Okay.
And he has a fantastic book on Amazon if you search his name. But he again, is one of the, I guess, pioneers towards this thinking that arteriosclerosis is actually driven by an inflammatory process, as opposed to what we thought was, you know, our saturated fat intake causing plaque production.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
And I guess that's why it's important then with our blood work that we keep an eye on HSCRP, high sensitivity C-reactive protein, because that gives us a view of how much inflammation is going on in our body right now.
Hmm.
So if we have a low HSCRP, we know then that there's low inflammation throughout our body. So we have possibly a low risk towards cardiovascular disease.
Okay. I feel like the more I hear, the more it seems inflammation is like the root of everything bad, really, isn't it?
A lot of disease. Yeah. And I mean, that's the new paradigm of the last 7 or 8 years of, you know, inflammation driving mental health issues, inflammation driving diabetes, you know, sugar intake. It is starting to become more of a buzzword as well, though, where anyone is throwing out, oh, you know, this combats inflammation, so you need to take this supplement because we need to kill inflammation. But we do need, you know, a certain level of inflammation, like I'm sure Scott has covered tons of times on Muscle Minds, for, you know, a hypertrophic response.
Yeah, because that's what I'm thinking. Like bodybuilding, on the other hand, you know, it's a controlled activation of inflammation, right?
Correct. So we have this controlled setting of inflammation when we train, but we also need to make sure that outside of those windows that our inflammation response is controlled and not allowed to, I guess, run beyond its due course.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's where I feel when it comes to cardiovascular health is that we need to make sure that, okay, for example, someone has higher LDL production. Well, rather than going the route of immediately resorting to statin therapy, which blocks the reduction of cholesterol, we can actively seek out either, you know, protecting the cholesterol that's produced. And again, looking at, it's not widespread in the UK and Ireland or Europe, but in the US, I know that you can get NMR spectroscopy done on your blood work. And basically, what that does is it tells you the size of your particles, the size of your LDL and HDL.
Okay.
So we know that potentially, and again, there is conflicting evidence over this because of you get into the other forms of LDL, which is non-HDL cholesterol or non-LDL cholesterol, I meant to say, which has very low density LDL, which is VLDL, and then you have ILDL, intermediate LDL. Those molecules can be both large and small, and they have implications in heart disease also. So we there's one side of thinking that says that, okay, particle size matters, because again, if you have a large LDL particle and the endothelium, like I said, is only single cells big, well, then how is a large molecule going to pass through the endothelium? If it's massive, it'd be like having a brick wall with a tiny marble sized hole and trying to throw a football through that hole. It's just going to bounce off.
That makes sense. And now I knew that particle size was important, but I didn't know why. But now I do, I think. At least the basics of it. the football analogy sort of version.
That's sort of like the basic thinking to it. But we have seen then that the likes of VLDL and the ILDL, which are the intermediate to LDL, when LDL is getting processed, that they can actually pass through the endothelium and cause atherosclerotic plaque. So on one hand, yes, we want to make sure that the particle sizes that we generate are kept controlled, but that's only a part of the story.
Okay.
And again, that's a huge focus for nutritional science beyond the realm of me as a pharmacologist.
Okay.
So it's something that we can keep track of, that we want to make sure that, you know, our LDL particles, we're producing larger size particles versus smaller size. And the same goes for HDL, that we're making appropriate sized molecules for its purpose of transporting cholesterol through the body.
Okay.
I guess there's a flawed way of thinking that, say, for example, and I'm not too clued in on the conversion between UK and US, but in the UK, say, for example, your HDL was 0.5, which could be probably maybe 25 in US terms for HDL. So it's quite low. That your LDL could be, say, 3, which would probably equate to maybe 280 in the US, I think, off the top of my head.
Okay.
That basically what you do then is you take a statin, because taking a statin is going to reduce the LDL number. So now you have a favorable ratio between the two.
But your HDL is still low.
Still low, yeah. So I don't get around this sort of way of thinking, because LDL has so many functions in the body towards even mental health and distribution of cholesterol throughout the body for important processes for cellular function, that it doesn't make sense to reduce LDL with a statin just to make the ratio between HDL and LDL better.
Okay, yeah.
But a lot of bodybuilders are doing this. They're taking into their own hands, basically running the likes of lorvastatin or some other form of statin, thinking that reducing my LDL is going to help me balance towards my low HDL.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that there were these positive benefits to LDL, like you had just mentioned, to even like mental health and stuff. I had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, for cholesterol redistribution in the brain, our brain is a fatty organ. So we need a certain level of cholesterol being delivered to our brain. Obviously, we don't want that, you know, gone awry, which can lead then possibly to, you know, beta amyloid production, where we have plaques forming in our brain.
Okay.
But we do require some cholesterol transport to our brain also. So eradicating LDL to a very low number, in my mind, just doesn't make sense. The other thing then, and this is an interesting anecdote, there was Linus Pauling. He's a renowned Nobel Prize winning physicist.
Okay.
He has the Pauling Institute in the US. And back in the early 80s, he went to try and publish research called the Pauling Therapy. And it was basically a view of lowering LDL production in the body naturally.
Okay.
And it was by applying simple displacement chemistry. And in that regard, what it was basically was, we have these residues on our LDL molecules called LPA, lipoprotein A.
Okay.
So anyone who gets blood work, advanced blood work in the US, can look at how much LPA is in their body. That LPA is again implicated in cardiovascular disease, in that the LPA attaches to receptors on our arterial wall and potentially can cause inflammation response. So Linus Pauling, he discovered that LPA is full of lysine, and the LPA receptors in our body have lysine residues. So his thinking was, if we flood the body with L-lysine, the LPA will attach to the free lysine in our blood that we've ingested and get removed recycled out of our body without ever getting to attach to its receptor. And I've seen this in dozens of people. 5 grams of L-lysine before bed with 5 grams of vitamin C.
Okay.
And I've seen LDL numbers drop in half.
No kidding. Wow. Huh.
Based on this simple displacement chemistry, but not for conspiracy theorists, but they blocked his paper from being published and basically ridiculed his idea.
Really? Really? Why? Because it wouldn't be beneficial to the pharmaceutical companies?
Pretty much. Huh. Like, so, and I mean, anyone that's listening, try it. I guarantee you, if you have high LDL, like in the fours and fives, for people in the UK, and then obviously somewhere around 280 in the US, I guarantee you that's going to drop 2 points pretty much after, I'd say, 6 weeks therapy.
Huh, okay.
It's an incredible, cheap, effective method to try for LDL.
One thing I'm concerned or confused about then, because you had just said you don't necessarily, so a statin reduces LDL to improve the ratio. So you mentioned there's a way you could do this through supplements, but why now? But I thought you were also saying though, we don't necessarily want to just reduce it.
So what we're reducing there, like I said, is LPA, which is a pro arteriosclerotic form of LDL.
I see.
So the LPA residues bind to the lysine that you ingest, and you're removing those LPA molecules, basically.
Okay. That makes sense to me then. Thank you.
So with a statin, you're doing global
LDL.
LDL and HDL. Like, it basically blocks, when we have cholesterol, it goes through a series of transformations involving coenzyme QA.
Okay.
And that coenzyme A basically gets blocked with a statin, and you don't proceed past that point of cholesterol synthesis.
Okay. Well, thanks for bearing with me here, because this is some, like, my learning curve is pretty high here. So I appreciate you bearing with me, and I hope everybody is following along too. I'm sure some of you guys might be smarter than me on this. If not, I hope you're hanging in there with me. Where does the vitamin D and D3 and K2 come in this supplement product?
So that was what I was getting to when we were talking about when the foam cells aggregate together to create plaque.
Yes.
One of the things that is a component of plaque is calcium.
Okay.
And that's what I was saying at the very start, that we can do a non-invasive, basically an MRI of the body, called a calcium score test.
Yeah.
Which basically shows how much calcium is distributed throughout our arteries. And that gives us then a risk factor number towards, okay, we could look at maybe the carotid artery in our neck, which again is another source that we could investigate towards our cardiovascular health. And if there's any, you know, potential blockage here, that will give us then the amount of calcium that has been distributed into our arteries through calcium mineral loss from our bones.
Okay.
When we look at testosterone causes loss of calcium from our bones.
Yeah.
Estrogen causes retention of calcium into our bones. So, like I discussed in my talk this year, actually, when I went through the side effects of steroids, that's why we start to see in females why the jaw gets squared. Because of the high level of androgens is causing bone mineral loss from the jaw.
Huh.
And so we start to see that, you know, that loss of mineral density from the bones of our jaw, and again, reshaping. Okay. Whereas estrogen protects that.
Huh, okay.
So when we take high levels of steroids, high levels of androgens, we've potential there for higher amounts of calcium to be lost from our bones.
Okay.
And if we don't intervene and recycle that calcium back into our bones, which is used through vitamin K and vitamin D transport, then there's potential that ends up forming, you know, inside the plaque that's developing in our arteries. So we want to make sure that when we're losing that bone mineral density, that we're redistributing it back into our body again.
Interesting.
And that's where the vitamin K2 and D3 comes into play.
Okay. And you have this, the dosing is 5,000 units of D3. Would you consider that to be a pretty decent dose just in general for people? Any reason to ever go higher than that? Because I see capsules that are like 10,000.
Yeah, I mean, for people in Europe where we don't get a lot of sun except for our summer periods, your vitamin D status for athletes, if you're monitoring blood work, should be somewhere around 70 to 80. That's a decent 25-hydroxy value for vitamin D if you're not getting regular sunlight exposure and you are an intensely trained athlete. Because again, we look at vitamin D more so as a hormone as opposed to as a vitamin, because it's involved in so many different processes within the body.
Okay.
5,000 IUs daily should yield somewhere around a 35 to 40 number in general population.
And I found I had a deficiency, and I didn't realize it post cycle, and it may have been also because I was using gear. I was doing a contest, after which I couldn't break that sense of fatigue. You know, that pre contest fatigue when you're really dieted down. It went on for a long, long time. I mean, I thought it was everything from, you know, had my thyroid checked, that was fine. I even questioned if I had narcolepsy for a while. And then I started vitamin D supplementation, and it worked almost instantly, Dean, like almost instantly for energy production. So I could say, man, I didn't realize that it also had these benefits, but it's definitely made a huge difference in my life. I think that's a killer supplement. I know a lot of people talk about D though. Like this isn't groundbreaking that D can be very beneficial, right?
Yeah. But the other thing then that you need to be very careful with vitamin D is that it can upset the ratio of magnesium. When we spoke about magnesium with COMT.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking from experience, because one of the easiest ways to combat a viral infection like a common cold or flu when it's starting to progress, and this is just a tip for anyone listening because it's wintertime, is you plow your body with vitamin A and vitamin D.
Okay.
Those are the two cofactors that your immune system requires to fight off viral infections.
Huh.
And I got quite sick earlier in the year when I had a really bad flu infection that lasted about 2 weeks.
Oh, God.
And when that was starting to progress, for the first 5 days, I was plowing my body with 50,000 IUs of vitamin D to try and fight it off. And when I got my blood work done at the end of April, so this was 2 months after being sick, my vitamin D was up around 170. So it was sky high.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it's up that... when it's up that high, you're upsetting then your magnesium metabolism.
Oh.
So for I'd say April, May, June, July, I reduced my vitamin D intake to 2,000 IUs and increased my magnesium to try and balance that back out again.
Okay.
So it is a supplement that there is probably a ceiling to the amount that you'd want to take.
Yeah.
And that's why I said blood serum levels of about 80 to 90 in athletes is optimal.
Okay. Okay. Anything else in here that we haven't covered yet?
I guess what I touched over briefly was the Evnol, which is the tocotrienol. It's a patented complex.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So when we look at antioxidants in the body, we have two main ones, vitamin E and vitamin C.
Okay.
So vitamin E acts as an electron donor. So when it encounters a free radical, vitamin E gives up an electron to stabilize the other molecule. So the free radical now is no longer a free radical. It's a stable molecule. And the vitamin E now has lost an electron. So it's become a defunct version of vitamin E.
Okay.
Vitamin C then donates an electron to vitamin E to stabilize that again.
Okay.
So your vitamin C intake basically plays to your vitamin E, and your vitamin E acts as the pro antioxidant within your arteries.
Okay.
But the main form or the most stable forms within our arteries that we can utilize are the tocotrienols versus the tocopherols. So we have alpha, beta, gamma, and delta tocopherols and tocotrienols. So there's 8 forms of vitamin E. The Evnol is a patented form of the 4 tocotrienols, which are the most, probably one of the most powerful antioxidants that we can ingest.
Okay.
Now, I guess we need to be cognizant of the fact that if this was general population and we weren't causing potential issues towards inflammation, then, as Scott also has talked about before, taking massive amounts of antioxidants may not be beneficial to your health, because you lose that hormetic effect, where we need some form of oxidation happening for our body to adapt. But in the context of an enhanced athlete, because we have this potential for, you know, poor diet intake, the effects of androgen receptor stimulation, it probably does warrant the intake of an antioxidant, again, to combat offsetting that LDL oxidation from happening.
Okay.
So I guess it's a nice supplement, like I said, with the CV stack, in that you have 11 ingredients there rather than having to open 11 different pots every morning. You literally take 3 capsules of this in the morning and 3 at night.
Yeah. With EGCG, you had mentioned that as being a, you know, an antioxidant that's in here. It's at 300 milligrams. If you're to drink green tea, what kind of a dose do you get just drinking it out of the cup, if you know offhand?
Milligrams.
So it's okay. Quite low. So you really couldn't use it therapeutically just by drinking tea then?
I think each cup of tea might have, now this is me going off the top of my head, somewhere around 5 to 10 milligrams of EGCG. It's not a lot.
Okay.
And EGCG is also thermally unstable, as far as I can remember. So again, boiling green tea at too high of a temperature can actually destroy some of the EGCG.
Okay. That would make sense. I'm looking over everything here. One that we kind of are, I'm going to go back a little bit before we wrap up. Can you talk a little bit more in depth about the citrus bergamot? Because I know that there's a lot of people that are using that. I don't have a very good understanding of it. And I assume if I don't, that there's probably other people out there that don't either. But I know it could be really beneficial.
Yeah. So basically, citrus bergamot, in citrus bergamot, we have what are known as bioflavonoids. So they are a class of molecules which we suspect, again, to have an antioxidant potential.
Okay.
When we look at the research, I can't think of the name of the two of them off the top of my head. If anyone wants to have a read over on Trained by JP Nutrition, I'd run a full write-up on citrus bergamot in the product Love Heart.
Okay.
So I have all the science in there. Off the top of my head, I can't think of the name of the two of them, but there's two main flavonoids within citrus bergamot. And what they do then is they feed into potentially lipoprotein synthesis in the liver to generate HDL molecules.
Okay.
Now, like I said, when people push citrus bergamot as a supplement for raising HDL, if you have, like I said, super physiological levels of testosterone, so if your testosterone is above your physiological range and it's creating more hepatic lipase, no amount of citrus bergamot is going to counteract that.
Okay.
So it would be more suited if you were in, say, a TRT or cruise phase where you have a physiological level of TRT of testosterone, where you can then start to manipulate these processes to regenerate HDL.
I gotcha. Okay.
But if you're taking, say, testosterone and Anavar as a cycle in, you know, the superphysiological range, and it's destroying your HDL, no matter how much citrus bergamot you take, you're not going to counteract the effect of that steroid on HDL production.
Okay.
So it comes down to then, this is more so, like I said, an insurance policy to ensure what HDL you are left with is remaining intact. And that these compounds which improve HDL are probably more suited to when you are either off a physiological function or at a TRT dose.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for bearing with me here, man. And thank you for answering all my questions too. I know I'm coming from, you know, a much lower pay grade than you're at. So I appreciate you hanging with me. And like I said, I feel like if these are questions that I have, I know that there's a lot of other people out there listening too right now that that probably have similar questions. So, man, I really appreciate you coming on here and breaking it down in a way that we could understand. I'm looking forward to seeing this new fish oil chewable that you guys have coming out. Anything else coming down the lines that you can talk about from the company?
I have a new grains powder coming. So oh, that's cool. Currently being mixed. And that grains powder is probably going to be a first of a kind in that it's not a proprietary blend.
Huh, okay.
So every single vegetable and fruit within the product is specifically dosed.
No kidding. Interesting.
So rather than, you know, when you buy a greens powder, it'll say reds blend and it'll have all the red types of vegetables. And then it'll be like, you know, 1,000 milligrams. Well, our label is basically, you know, all the vegetables and showing you exactly the amounts of that vegetable.
Huh.
And I've basically gone one step further with the greens powder and I've included a beneficial mushroom complex.
Oh,
so there's
okay.
a whole science to mushrooms and potentially the beta glucans within mushrooms that can have positive effects on our immune system.
Huh.
There is a antimicrobial part to the greens powder in that, you know, you're taking these dehydrated vegetables and fruits, yeah. but you also want to make sure that we're keeping our gut, I guess, balanced to a favorable ratio of good bacteria to bad bacteria. So there are some natural herbs that act as antimicrobials to kill off bad bacteria.
Okay.
So it's a really exciting product. It's one of the first ones where when we put it together to taste test it, I was really afraid of what I was going to taste when I tried it. But it was absolutely beautiful. It mixed so clear, like a whey isolate.
Really?
And it just goes to show you. Yeah, I was shocked because we've gone the route that even like the green side, like the chlorella, the spinach, all these green vegetables that are in the greens powders, we've gone with such a low dose of them, like a balanced dose, that you then start to realize what corners other companies are taking when it comes to their greens powder and just chucking in a load of cheap chlorella and, you know, spirulina.
Wow.
And that's when you get the horrible, it's hard to describe, you know, that sort of like you're drinking grass, basically, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Terrible grass, too. Not just grass, but like the worst grass ever. It's they can be pretty strong. I was going to wait for you to finish and then say, but how does it taste? So that's pretty amazing, man.
We done a chocolate and a berry flavor. When I was taste testing the chocolate, Morgan was beside me in the kitchen. I was shaking it up and I was going to her. I just smelled it. I was like, that actually doesn't smell too bad. And I was getting ready to, you know, normally when you have a greens shake, you just drink it back in one go.
Yeah.
I went to go and neck it. And then after the first mouthful, I was like, actually, this is really nice.
That's badass, man.
So I'm looking forward to that. That's currently being mixed with the manufacturer. So we were hoping for a pre-Christmas release, but it's more than likely going to be January now, unfortunately.
Okay.
But that's going to be called Greens Plus.
Nice.
And the other thing that we have the greens powder, and then we have an AM and PM stack that I put together.
Okay.
So the AM is an adaptogen stack, which is like very high dosed adaptogens like ashwagandha, bacopa, rhodiola, and periwinkle.
Okay.
And basically that's just designed to, you know, we have so many people leading stressful lives, myself included, that there are periods of time when we need to, again, adapt and deal with the stress that we're exposed to.
Absolutely.
So the AM stack was something that I was personally using myself to cope with daily stresses. And I thought that if we put that together, again, with me taking, you know, 7 different adaptogens in the morning, if we put a product together that could be used, you know, periodically, you know, every 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
For people who have stressful lives, it's going to benefit their mental cognition also. So
Absolutely.
They're going to perform better.
Hmm.
And then the PM stack is a product that's designed to stack with the sleep stack in that it's got a high dose of phosphatidylserine, again, to lower cortisol, a high dose of alpha-GPC as a choline source. So again, that's going to help potentially feed into deep sleep.
Yeah.
And then we have a high dose of Lutamax, which is lutein, for again, for eye health, and zeaxanthin, which is another antioxidant for eye health. And then we have theanine and broccoli seed extract, which we know in the literature can help with the clearance of caffeine.
Oh.
So basically it helps speed up CYP metabolism of caffeine.
Okay.
So the thinking there is that if you take this PM stack 2 hours before sleep, mm-hmm. and then the sleep stack, you know, half an hour before sleep, the PM stack will help speed up some of the caffeine that may be still in your system, causing you to have an overactive mind when it comes to going asleep.
I'll be damned. Wow, that's pretty cool, man.
So two of my nice ideas that I thought would beneficial people's mental health. So that those are the three imminent products. And then there's about four or five other new ones that I'm slowly trying to get through.
Well, listen, if people want to follow along and watch for when you release this stuff, where are the best places? Like, let me know what your social media is and as well as the social media for Supplement Needs and where they can find Supplement Needs online too.
So the Supplement Needs website is supplementneeds.co.uk. So on there, you just have to scroll to the tab of brands and you'll be able to search the whole health range for bodybuilders, basically. And my Instagram is DeanSTM, DeanSTM. And that's also my YouTube. I've been a little slack with YouTube this year, but I'm hoping now in the next year that I'm going to get a bit more time to actually start putting out some content for people on YouTube. And we have a education website for Supplement Needs coming in 2020, where I have a lot of video content recorded discussing, you know, in 5 to 10 minute videos, all the different products like the CV stack we talked about today.
Ah, beautiful.
So it's hoped that then there's a visual library for people to go and educate themselves on the products before buying into it.
That's really cool.
And then with that, I'll hopefully put some content out like today's discussion on heart health to allow people to get more educated on why it might be beneficial to choose some of the supplements.
That's awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you breaking everything down. And I really do. I love your guys' company. Everything that I have used from you guys has been really top notch and solid. One of the questions I get before we go, I figure I better ask you because I know people will message me. Is this available in the U.S.?
Yes, they do ship internationally.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we don't have a U.S. distribution service yet, so there isn't something locally in the U.S. distributing the products. So. Okay. The shipping probably is going to cost maybe about $20 to $25 for international world shipping.
Okay.
But the company does ship worldwide.
Okay, cool. I look forward to you guys getting some U.S. distribution because that'll really open you up in a lot of ways, I'm sure. And I know that there are people that have been ordering here regardless of, a little bit of extra shipping cost. It's, you know, high quality products, high quality supplements. And if you're in a position where you could benefit from one of these, it's worth its weight. So Dean, I appreciate your time, man. I appreciate you coming on as always. And I appreciate you dumbing it down for me, so that I can understand and hopefully, we've helped to educate a few other people today too.
Me too. I really hope that whoever's listening got some good value out of what we discussed today. It's always a pleasure.
All right, guys, for another episode here at Think Big Bodybuilding Media, Advices Radio, if you're listening on audio. Once again, if you haven't hit the subscribe button, please do. Everything that Dean had said about where you can find Supplement Needs and himself, that'll all be in the show notes. So look at the description here. And Dr. Dean, thank you very much. Hope you have a great day, brother.